Let's get together, talk about the movies that we saw this week. We'll have discussions, talk film news, we'll laugh a lot and act like geeks. Sometimes we'll have a guest or two, sometimes it's just the two of us. Let's crack some jokes and tell some folks to come along and hang with us!
Mike and Mike go to the movies. Mike and Mike go to the movies.
Yeah!
You have chosen wisely.
Waterloo, Napoleon did surrender. Oh yeah, and I have put this podcast on in quite a similar way. The audiobook on the shelf is always repeating itself. Mike and Mike making a podcast about movies. Mike and Mike discussions to talk about all of these. Whoa, 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 Mike and Mike finally going to the movies.
The sax solo right after that.
Hell yeah.
It was like they were right here with us.
Really, if I really wanted to replicate ABBA, I would have had you try to chime in to harmonize. but I know you wouldn't go for that.
you know me well.
When we talked about Butcher's Crossing on the Complete Works last week, and we had a bunch of like Fred Schneider as the B-52s jokes. You made a comment like, "Oh, I was wondering which one of us is going to do the voice first." And after I did the voice, and I was like, "There's no way you were going to do the voice."
I thought about it for a second.
I don't think you've ever done a voice in this podcast.
Me, a voice guy? No, never voice man. Notorious Mike D, anti-voice.
I'm Mike Smith. Joining me as always is a disgraced soccer coach who just might learn something about himself by the time this is all over.
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing really great. I'm excited to take this awful soccer team and bring them to the brink of victory or whatever that movie's about. I don't know.
I mean, you got it.
I think I nailed it. Yeah. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. The usual kind of happening around here. Just really trying to watch a lot of stuff in the last couple of weeks because we are coming down to the end of 2023, Mike.
Yes. Yeah. I went to Letterboxd and just like searched 2023 and found a list that somebody made that like it was like a couple hundred movies or whatever. All the movies that came out. And I was just like, add to watch list. So it's going to be homework time for the pod.
Yeah, you're getting ahead of the game a little bit, Mike, because normally, I mean, you wait until like the last week or so of the year before you start really like kind of cramming in movies, right?
Yes. Yeah, I try to basically cram for finals. I don't know if I'm going to watch anything till then, but at least I'll have picked out some movies to watch before I'm texting you at midnight like, oh, shit, what are we like, what came out this year?
Yeah. And whenever you do that, I always feel like a little bit guilty because I'm like, there's movies in my top 10 that I know Mike hasn't seen that he would probably love. But I don't want the list to overlap too much, so I'm not going to recommend those.
So you gatekeep me is what you're saying, Mike.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want you to see Barbie. I don't know.
Wow. How girl boss of you.
But today we are doing some discussions, just a freewheeling discussions episode, talking about some of the stuff that we have been watching lately. We just did a discussions episode about 2 weeks ago after not having done one for like 2 months.
Yes.
And so we're doing one a little bit sooner than we have been in the past. So I think we'll have a little bit less stuff than we usually have in a discussions episode this week, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think usually, you know, out of all the things that the regular types of episodes we do, discussions is certainly the easiest, least prep work involved because we're just always sort of watching stuff. So it's holiday times. We need to take it easy a little bit. Let's just do a bunch of discussion episodes.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And there is definitely a lot of stuff that we've been watching to talk about. So let's get right into it, Mike. It's time for our discussions.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're gonna talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for our discussions here on Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. And Mike D, why don't you start us off? What have you been watching lately?
Sure. I'll bring it back to some of the directors that I've been trying to fill in the gaps a little bit. We've been talking about that. That's particularly Michael Mann and David Fincher.
Yeah.
I don't really know what sort of picked these as the ones, but I feel like over the last few months, we've talked about them a lot. I think maybe when you watched The Game, Yes, first a couple months ago.
I watched The Game because I realized it was the only David Fincher movie I had never seen, and I wanted to watch it before The Killer came out.
Right.
And so I watched The Game, and then you watched The Game. We both watched The Killer. And so you watched another David Fincher movie, Mike?
Yes. Yeah, I watched another David Fincher movie, which I had seen before, but hadn't seen probably not since it came out, because I would have been a little young, but in that era home video, and that is 2002's Panic Room.
Okay.
Which I had definitely seen, HBO or DVD or something at some point, but I hadn't seen it in, a decade or so. And I was looking through the David Fincher filmography and I was like, well, I guess why not? I'll pick this one. And man, what a picture, I don't know. I sort of feel like this maybe gets, maybe not maligned, that seems aggressive, but like forgotten about, not really, it's like not really up there in the Fincher.
Right.
Oeuvre, whatever.
the A tier of like the Fincher oeuvre, you always hear about, Fight Club, Seven, Social Network, Zodiac, like
exactly.
those movies. Panic Room, maybe more of the B tier, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But the B tier for David Fincher is like A tier for anybody else.
That's true.
It's one of those kind of deals. And just the setup of this movie, the whole Jodie Foster and 15-year-old or whatever, Kristen Stewart, just moved into this house or early teens, move into this house early, basically. And these people, Forest Whitaker, Dwight Yoakam, who I was just like always excited when Dwight Yoakam's in a movie. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
And Jared Leto.
Yikes. Morbius himself.
The guy, yeah. Are these burglars that break in because it's, they know the family history of the person that used to own the house, and there's alleged floor safe with the inheritance money in it hidden somewhere. And Jodie Foster and Kristen Stewart aren't supposed to be there yet. And of course, they are, and they lock themselves in the panic room, the titular panic room, and there it is, man. And then, and then it's like, is it 90 minutes? I feel like, it's almost 2 hours, but it feels like a tight 90.
But you were so gripped by it.
Yeah. And I have so much fun. It's just so exciting and tense. And I had the memory of this being like one of those like very green movies. Like it felt like that era of movie where like everything is just like washed out and green and stuff.
Sure. Post The Matrix. Everything was trying to copy that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not. It's really not. It's only the stuff I realized now, that the scenes that take place in the panic room, which they like take some pains to establish, have like these really harsh fluorescent lights. So it lays this like white and green washed out look. And the rest of the house is like beautiful and yellow and gorgeous because it's like midnight and raining and scary, like a spooky old house kind of thing.
Right.
And yeah, man, Panic Room, it ruled.
Okay, Panic Room, David Fincher. I've seen this movie once, and it was a few years back, and I also remember really enjoying it. It is still probably like, like I said, like B tier Fincher or whatever, but still a great time, still really, really fun. And this has got to be one of Kristen Stewart's first movies, right? If not her first?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like that is correct. She is super young in it. I don't know exactly what... trying to see if I could sort Letterboxd like that, but I don't think you can very quickly, unfortunately. Release date. Hold on. Oh,
okay.
God.
It was not. It was her third film, her third feature film.
Okay.
Her third theatrical release. She was in a TV movie where she played as a Disney Channel original movie called The 13th Year.
Oh.
Otherwise, yeah, she had she was an uncredited extra in The Flintstones and Viva Rock Vegas.
Incredible.
Then was in a movie called The Safety of Objects and then Panic Room 2002. So yeah, definitely like the earliest showcase for Kristen Stewart, I think, at least, right?
And she's really great in it. I mean, it's Forest Whitaker and Jodie Foster, and she's like right there. It's not like it's not like, oh, this is pretty good for a kid. Like, she's really good, so that's really cool. And yeah, you see the whole thing right there, the whole career right laid out right in the panic room.
Nice, very cool. So that's Panic Room from 2002, David Fincher's film, on a Fincher kick. I believe one of your other movies, Mike, is also Fincher inspired, but we'll talk about that later. You might not realize which one I'm talking about until we
I got it. Yeah, okay.
But what's the other, your Michael Mann movie, Mike?
Yes. So I'm also filling in the filmography of Michael Mann, who has way more movies that I have not seen, I think. And that is, one of the pinnacles for Michael Mann, 1986's Manhunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, and I've heard about this movie forever, and it's so funny, like, when you sort of do the, like, becoming a film person thing, and you're like, oh, baby, Silence of the Lambs, incredible, right?
Yeah.
And then somebody tells you, like, there's an other Hannibal movie, and you're like, what? There's one first.
It's called Ridley Scott's Hannibal.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Red Dragon's where it's at. So I finally was like, okay, you know what? I got to take a look at this movie. And it's everything you want in a Michael Mann movie. It's highly stylized. It's just beautiful and amazing and tense and creepy. And what's his name? William Peterson is great. Tom Noonan as the fucking Tooth Fairy and stuff is just terrifying.
Right.
He's so creepy. Joan Allen is amazing in it. Is awesome. And of course, Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter is like amazing.
Like unbelievable how good he is in this movie.
So good. The sequence when the like prison guard or whatever finds the like note written to Hannibal in his cell, and they're like racing for how long they can keep Hannibal in detention in a different room so they can do all that. They have like 3 hours before he'll get suspicious or whatever. And it is just like pulse pounding, like ever sprinting down hallways, getting into helicopters, running to labs, and I've got it. People doing that whole thing, and it's so much fun. It made me think about, you know, maybe William Peterson as a season four potential Complete Works. I've only seen a couple of his movies. Of course, I know him from CSI.
Right.
And the like 15 seasons or whatever he's on for that.
That would be tough to cover on on the Complete Works. I think
we just do season premiere of every season
of every season of CSI.
It's so funny.
Just 15 solid episodes of CSI. I mean, you know, there's To Live and Die in LA, there's Manhunter, Young Guns 2 is a William Peterson joint.
Sign me up, baby.
You can certainly, it really, his filmography, I'm looking at his movies now, and he does not have that many movies.
No.
I think it, the bulk of the career is in fact CSI. This is a season we could get done if we only covered CSI once. We could get the season done in like half a year.
Yeah,
like,
6 months, like, in and out. Less. Let's go. Yeah. Season 3.5, you know?
So yeah, something to consider. Yeah, and Hannibal is such, it's one of those weird roles. And, you know, it's so heavily defined by Anthony Hopkins' performance as Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs and in a couple other movies, Red Dragon, like you said. But obviously Mads Mikkelsen played him in the Hannibal TV show, but Brian Cox did it first in Manhunter. And it's such a different portrayal of Hannibal than Anthony Hopkins is.
Yeah. And it's also so interesting, like the weight that the character of Hannibal Lecter has in Manhunter versus like how impactful he is in Silence of the Lambs and the other movies.
Right.
Like, he's certainly important and like integral to Will Graham's like backstory and like that whole thing. But like, I don't know. He's sort of in two or three scenes, and that's kind of really it. He serves as the like springboard for him to find Tooth Fairy, whereas the other movies, obviously, he becomes the main character in all the other sequels.
Yeah. You know? Well, in Silence of the Lambs, he's only in it for like 10 minutes. Like
that's true.
That's the thing that people forget about Silence of the Lambs, like how much Anthony Hopkins like, you know, took hold of people in that movie. Like I think he has a bigger role in that movie than he does in Manhunter. Like he plays, like the movie ends with him escaping, right?
Like that whole prison break where he wears the guy's face.
Yeah.
And all that
pretty
stuff.
Cool.
Which rules?
And then like later there's like Hannibal, like this movie that's just called Hannibal, and then there's Hannibal Rising and Red, and then there's Red Dragon, which is based on the same story as Manhunter is. It's like the same plot.
Yeah, it's the same book. Yeah, the same novel.
Which I think the Hannibal TV show also adapted at some point. Having never watched the show, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure they did that at some point. Yeah, no, Brian Cox, super cool in Manhunter. And there's a great sequence. I haven't seen this movie in a very long time, but the Inagata Davida sequence.
Oh my God.
Chef's kiss. Beautiful. Incredible.
Amazing. Yeah, Joan Allen is so good in that scene as the like blind film editor photography developer or whatever. She works like in the dark room or something.
Yeah.
And she like sort of is like starts dating Tom Newton's character, air quotes. Holy shit, so fucking good.
Nice. You were kind of catching up on these Fincher movies because The Killer was coming out. Are you catching up on these Michael Mann movies because Ferrari is coming out, Mike? Are you excited for Ferrari?
A little bit. Yeah. I'm pretty excited for Ferrari. Heard some mixed things, but I'm interested in that. I don't know. They're just kind of like these two still working, you know, kind of, event filmmakers when they make a new movie that I'm like, you know what? There's some stuff in there that I just have never gotten around to eventually. So I want to cross some of these off the list because I fucking love almost all of their movies. So why not keep watching more of them, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. There's definitely some holes in the Michael Mann filmography I need to fill as well. So maybe that'll happen soon.
Black Hat when, you know?
Well, I've seen Black Hat.
Oh, really? Of all the movies I've seen.
I was one of the very, very few people, Mike, who saw Black Hat in the theater when it came out.
Interesting.
It was me and no one else, and I didn't like it that much.
Yeah.
But I would be curious. I know there was a director's cut that has come out in the years since that is now available on like a beautiful Arrow Blu-ray. And so, yeah, I hope to check that out again at some point. Maybe a revisit will change my mind.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple more in that like, you know, late 90s, mid 2000s era that I have to get to when I was not old enough to go to these movies in theaters anymore or yet, but like wasn't quite aware of their older, you know, like when you're like, oh, the classics, let me see those first. So you see the older stuff. So I got to go back and watch some of those things from when I was growing up, but not able to see R-rated movies yet in theaters, you know?
Fair enough. So that's Manhunter and Panic Room. And then I have all of mine are new releases that I have to talk about because, like I said, end of year 2023. Got to catch up on a bunch of stuff. And the first of which is the new epic from Ridley Scott, the director of Hannibal. And many
imagine
other films.
That's what the poster said.
Yes. Napoleon from the director of Hannibal. I think Hannibal was the movie Ridley Scott made right after Gladiator, I want to say.
Interesting.
Like he's had an up and a wild career.
That's the thing about Ridley Scott. You know, he's got some absolute home run movies, but like his batting average isn't really that great.
it's not super great. But there is always, I think there's always something of interest in a Ridley Scott movie. I think he is somebody who is really, really attentive to production design and, you know, kind of creating the most compelling image he can and just does not seem to know what makes a good script or not. And so when he chooses a script, it's like, yeah, whatever, I can make cool images.
Yes.
And so that has resulted in some amazing movies, that has resulted in some not so great movies. And Napoleon is out now, and I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty solid. It is about 2.5 hours, and Ridley Scott has already said there's going to be like a 4-hour director's cut of the movie.
Holy shit.
And I think the 4-hour director's cut, it's going to be pretty sick. I think I have faith in that one.
That's crazy that he would just announce that like while the movie's in theaters. Like I have a superior product coming later. Like, well, I guess I'll just wait then.
Yeah, I mean, and that is, I think that's a totally fair reaction. But that's also the Ridley Scott thing.
People,
he's very well known for releasing director's cuts after the release of a movie. Blade Runner, of course, has been recut many, many times. And now there's the final cut, which is theoretically the actual final cut. But Kingdom of Heaven, another good example of a movie that got really mixed reviews when it came out. And then when the director's cut came out, people were like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I think I put that on my Let's Rank alternate cuts even.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, which I remember seeing that movie in theaters and not really, I don't remember my reaction to it at the time, but that director's cut, man, holy shit, it's so good.
And so I was looking forward to Napoleon, especially because anytime Ridley Scott kind of goes into historical epic territory, that's usually pretty good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes not. Exodus, Gods and Kings, awful, terrible movie. But I think he's had a more of a hotter streak in recent years, like more hits than misses. And his last two movies were The Last Duel and House of Gucci. Didn't like House of Gucci that much, but loved The Last Duel. I'm a big Last Duel fan. I think it's among his best movies. And so Napoleon tonally kind of reminded me a little bit of The Last Duel. It's a big historical epic, but it is also pretty funny. And, you know, it's a movie that is very acutely aware that Napoleon was like a little insecure twerp, you know? Yeah. It's like not trying to build him up as like some grandiose leader or something. Like it's always taking the piss out of Napoleon. And that's there in Ridley Scott's direction, and it's there in Joaquin Phoenix's performance. And so, yeah, I had a pretty good time with Napoleon. I think the first hour and a half is legitimately great. Like there's so many funny moments. There's great stuff in there. The battle sequences are amazing. Like it looks incredible. And then I think the last hour or so kind of peters out a little bit. I think the last hour or so really starts to feel maybe a little bit rushed, or like it's kind of just kind of running out of steam a little bit, whatever it is.
Like there's 2 hours missing in between.
A little bit, yeah. Kind of felt like, maybe there's going to be a lot more fleshed out here in the director's cut. So I did really enjoy Napoleon. I think it's well worth seeing, especially if you can see it in a theater. It looks so good. But it's pretty solid stuff. It's no Last Duel, but it's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that that period between The Martian and Last Duel is pretty rough in there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's Martian's 2015, Last Duel is 2021. I think in that time, Alien Covenant comes out, which is pretty good.
Do love, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then it's All the Money in the World was that same year, that movie's pretty bad. Yeah. And I mean, a movie that was like plagued with the issue of like, oh, replacing Kevin Spacey and putting Christopher Plummer in there, which was a baller move. Like, really great they were able to do that. Movie's still not very good. and then I mean, he must have had a movie in between those and The Last Duel, right?
He must have. He makes 8 movies a year, so.
Yeah, but then there was also the pandemic. That's you know, true. I don't know. I think, I think his next up was Last Duel and House of Gucci. But you know, you go dig a little bit further back in the 2010s and it's like, okay, Robin Hood, not very good. Prometheus? Kind of good. I like Prometheus. There's some good stuff in there. Counselor? I like The Counselor.
True. I never saw that, but I know how insane it is and how much you like it.
It's a wild movie. Some cool stuff in there. And then it's Exodus, Gods and Kings, which I think the worst Ridley Scott movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
I haven't seen his whole filmography. He has a lot of movies. But that is definitely, it's rough stuff. But still an interesting movie because it's the Moses story and it's about these two brothers, you know, taken apart from each other. And he made it right after Tony Scott died.
Right.
And so it is dedicated to Tony Scott. And I don't know. There's still interesting stuff, even in his worst things. But Napoleon, not among his worst works. I think it's pretty good.
All right. I guess I'll wait for the 4-hour and then watch the regular version because 4 hours is a lot.
You'll wait till the 4-hour version comes out and then opt to watch the 2.5 version.
Correct.
Instead.
Yes. You understand.
Yes. But yeah, Napoleon is out in theaters right now. And that is why I sang Waterloo by ABBA in case that wasn't clear in the beginning. And then I also wanted to mention another new movie. This is currently streaming on the Criterion Channel. It's one I wanted to watch when it came out earlier this year, but just wasn't playing anywhere near me. It's called A Fire, which is the new film from director Christian Petzold, a filmmaker who has gotten a lot of acclaim over the years, but I've not seen any of his other movies. A Fire is really, really, really great movie about these two friends, one of which is a writer, one of which is an artist. They go out to this kind of cabin in the middle of the woods. There's a beach nearby, and they go for this like sort of writing retreat. Like this guy who's a writer like really needs to get working on his book, like kind of turn something into his publisher so that he can, you know, be successful, all that stuff. And he's having a really hard time kind of getting started or getting to anything that's good. And then when they get to the house, there's a woman that's already staying there. And they call the guy's mom who owns the house and it's like, oh yeah, I didn't tell you that she's staying there. And like, so they kind of have to coexist together. And you're following this guy, this writer, who is the most self-absorbed asshole that's ever been put to film.
Amazing.
And the movie pokes a lot of fun at that guy, and it has a lot of fun at that guy's expense. And it's really, really funny until it isn't. And then it gets really, really intense. So there's this threat of forest fires that's also happening near them. And they're all like, well, we're on this side of the forest, and it's happening on that side of the forest, so we're going to be fine. But spoilers. They're not going to be fine.
Turns out.
Turns out. And so you're kind of dealing with this guy.
See the title of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're dealing with this guy having this sort of existential crisis, like this sort of inferiority complex, like I'll never be good enough to be a real writer sort of thing. And people in his life telling him like, yeah, this book really sucks. You should work on something else.
That's amazing.
And yeah, this guy is, it kind of revels in how insufferable this guy is to everyone around him. And yeah, I had a really good time with this movie. I think it's really, really terrific, and it's awesome. It's on Criterion Channel right now.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen that on there, and I think it's one of their, like, you know, it's not a Criterion original movie, but like the streaming premiere or whatever the thing they do sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it played in theaters earlier this year, in like limited release. But yeah, it's one of those, you know, art house films that got to premiere on the Criterion Channel, and so got a solid platform there, I think, for people to check it out.
Nice.
And then, yeah, and then one more new release before we jump back to Mike, and that is the new film from Taika Waititi, Next Goal Wins, which, I don't know.
That's kind of what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Taika Waititi is somebody who I'm generally a fan of. I like Taika. I am the guy still out there who liked Thor Love and Thunder. But much to the chagrin of the... of the people at Rapture Press, Andrew and Sam, who, man, every time that movie, like, I can't post anything on Twitter without them being like, but what about Thor Love and Thunder? Have you realized how shitty it is?
I can't believe they still allow us to host the podcast with how much you like Thor Love and Thunder, you know?
I don't even like it like that much. I think it's pretty like
number
good.
20 or whatever on your list.
Yeah, it's like pretty solid. I thought it was fun. I think it's almost as good or about as good as Thor Ragnarok. I don't know. I think
you
it's
bumped
fun.
Those breaks, Mike.
But I've also never been as big on Thor Ragnarok as a lot of people have, you know? But I like Taika Waititi a lot. I think he has made a lot of very good movies that like What We Do in the Shadows or Humph the Wilder People, I think is great. And like I said, I thought Thor Love and Thunder was fine. It was pretty good. I had a good time with it. Next Goal Wins, man, it's a swing and a miss. It's this movie stars Michael Fassbender as this disgraced soccer coach who has to basically, he's shipped out to American Samoa, the worst team in the league, and has to try to, you know, rally them up to try to, it's Bad News Bears. It's Bad News Bears is basically what the movie is. It's based on a relatively true story. There was a documentary about this team and like this whole story from about 10 years ago as well. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's some stuff in it that's kind of funny. I don't know. It doesn't really go hard enough with the comedy to be a really good comedy. And it's not rousing enough to be a really good sports movie. It just sort of exists. There's some fine stuff in it. There's some weird transphobic stuff in it. I think so. There's this one trans player on the team, and Michael Fassbender is like pretty antagonistic to her at first, and then, you know, warms up to her, all that stuff.
He learns that maybe we're not so different, you and I.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And it really does feel like maybe the movie should have been more about her, or at least like flesh that out a little bit more or something. I don't know. It didn't work for me, which is a bummer. But it's a new Taika Waititi movie. If you like Taika Waititi, I don't know, go see it. It's an okay time. It's not awful. It's not a bad time necessarily, but I went and I really like felt myself being like aware that I was sitting in a movie theater watching a film, you know.
That's always what you want the audience to be thinking about.
Like, I wasn't engrossed in the movie at all, you know. Next Goal Wins, Taika Waititi. It's I believe still out in theaters right now, but I don't think it did very well, so maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think I remember hearing, not that this necessarily is like an indicator of quality or anything, but like that this was one of those movies that like was completed a couple years ago and sort of like sat around and wasn't really finally released, sort of like you know, like Cabin in the Woods, and you watch it and you're like, why is Chris Hemsworth so young in this movie? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I think I don't think it was as delayed as like Cabin in the Woods, no, but yeah, yeah. I think I remember hearing stories about them like going to, oh, they're about to go film this, and I remember kind of being excited about it because like, oh man, Michael Fassbender's gonna let loose in a Taika Waititi comedy. Here we go,
let's
baby.
Go.
Like, that's a different mode. I haven't seen Michael Fassbender really do that, and Elizabeth Moss is in it. That's cool. And yeah, no, it just doesn't, it just falls flat, which is, that's a bummer.
What a shame.
Yeah. What else you got, Mike? What's, what else you've been watching?
To talk about a movie that doesn't quite fall flat. No, actually, I really liked this movie. I don't know where I was trying to go with that. That is Bottoms, that came out earlier this year.
Okay, and that is the one that I was saying is sort of influenced by David Fincher, specifically Fight Club.
Specifically Fight Club, which they name check a bunch of times in the movie. And I saw, you know, I had Letterboxd now for like certain people. You can like change the posters or whatever the hell.
I think you have to be like a patron or something.
Yeah, you have to be one of the paid members and stuff. And one of the guys, when I was looking through the list of 2023 releases, had this poster with the alternate like Fight Club poster. So it's like Rachel Sinnott holding up a bar of soap with Bottoms called into it. And I was like, what is the, oh, Bottoms. Okay. Like, what is going on here? this is about these two girls in high school, these two losers, Rachel Sinnott and Ayo Edebiri, who are lesbians, and they want to kiss girls, goddamn it, and they haven't kissed a girl in all of high school, and they come up with this plan by accident to start a quote-unquote self-defense club to teach girls. It's Fight Club. They make a Fight Club in their high school, and they'll be all hot and sweaty and wrestling and punching, and the vibes will be flowing, and then we'll be kissing girls, right? And that's the whole plot of the movie. And then, you know, I mean, within the first 5 minutes, you're like, okay, this isn't Earth. What's going on here? You know? And that was so much fun. I feel like, I don't know, it felt so refreshing in a way. I feel like I haven't seen a movie, and I can't really like put my finger on this and like name another movie that feels like this, but like where you, that like exists in its own world, you know, like all the Marvel stuff and all that, the blah, blah, blah. But like all those are going for some kind of verisimilitude with actual reality.
Right.
And this is just like the football players wear full football uniform and pads 24/7. One guy's in a cage in the background and they don't talk about it. That's hilarious where they're making just like profanity. The principal is making like profanity filled announcements and calling for like the ugly and untalented gays, please report to my office.
Right.
Stuff like that. Really stylized and weird. And just, yeah, it's an absolute blast. And I know you liked it and you wish it had gone a little bit further. So I don't know. That might be spoiler territory to discuss that now that I've seen it. But
no, I think it's totally fine. Yeah. I remember I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was really funny. But yeah, I kind of wanted it to go further into those like absurdist elements, I guess. For me, I was like, there's certain stuff that like is absurdist, but it almost like comes out of nowhere sometimes. You know, and that's pretty fun. And by the time you get to the end of the movie, it's like, all right, we're in full on banana pants territory here. But I kind of was like, oh, this is almost going full Anchorman. It's not quite full Anchorman or not quite full like Wet Hot American Summer, but yes. it's close, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I think those are both great like name checks for what this movie sort of feels like. And yeah, I had a blast. Marshawn Lynch, what a revelation, you know, honestly.
He's great. He's super funny in it. Yeah.
He's so funny. He was really funny on his episode of Welcome to Murderville also with Will Arnett.
Yes.
Do you remember that show on Netflix? That's very funny.
I meant to watch that show and never did.
Yeah, I mean, you could just watch that episode if you want because it's all just a, like self-contained.
Right.
Each episode's a different murder that they have to solve with a different celebrity. And Marshawn Lynch is so funny. And he's so funny in that. And it's all improvised. And this has a lot of outtakes at the end, which is very fun, where you see him like just firing off some stuff and it's hilarious. Yeah. So yeah, I really had a really fun time with Bottoms. So
nice. I'm glad. Yeah. I also really enjoyed it. I would like to watch it again. I went in with maybe like too high expectations or like maybe like a different view of like what the movie was going to be in my head or something. I think because I had seen Emma Seligman's previous movie, Shiva Baby, I really loved, and it is a very different movie than when Bottoms.
Yeah, I have Shiva Baby on Blu-ray and I haven't watched it yet, but I gotta push play finally. And yeah, I think this would really Bottoms would really reward additional watches, because every scene has like something going on, a throwaway visual gag going on in the background, like out of focus. There's one scene where they do like a therapy session basically with the fight group, fight club, instead of fighting. And like Marshawn Lynch has this like really big emotional thing. And then that ends. And then it's Rachel Sennott and the other characters having a conversation. And in the background, it's just Marshawn Lynch sobbing as someone's rubbing his back. Like, it's just a silent, you just see his like shoulders heaving. it's just so funny. And there's just stuff like that in like every scene, like the mascot just having a giant dong and just like uncommented on in the background. So yeah, Bottoms, fun times.
Yeah. All right. Bottoms. What else have you been watching, Mike?
I have also been watching. I was scrolling through my Netflix list. And I was like, what kind of shit do I have on here? Let me see what's going on. And I had a Indonesian action movie from 2016 called Headshot.
I saw you log this in Letterboxd and I had never heard of this.
Yes.
And so I went to do some research. Because I was like, wait, action movie that Mike D's watching. I don't know about this. Oh, the guy from The Raid is in this. Pretty cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe some thread on Twitter or something. I don't really remember. Somebody, I think in the post triple R hype of like international action movies, somebody was like, hey, if you are new to this, here's a bunch of recommendations. And I like just put a bunch of shit on my watch list and stuff.
Right.
And this was one of them. It is co-directed by Timo Tahante and Kimo Stambo. Timo Tahante directed The Night Comes for Us.
Yes.
And one of the VHS segments in 85?
I think in 94.
94, I don't remember.
Because I've seen that one. It was like the one with
the robot guy.
Yeah, it was like a robot thing.
Yeah. That's 94. You're right.
That was in 94. Because I actually haven't watched 99 or 85 yet. I've been slacking.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, honestly. And yeah, it stars the guy from The Raid, whose name is Aiko Uwais.
Yes.
And he's fucking awesome. And yeah, so this was just a story that basically takes place. This guy that Aiko plays washes up on a beach somewhere, and he's taken in, and he's in a coma, and he's taken in the hospital, being cared for by this doctor. And she kind of develops this like attraction or whatever kind of thing to him. And then he suddenly wakes up 2 months later, and he doesn't know who he is. And it's one of those things where it's sort of like a Jason Bourne kind of thing, I guess, you know, where he doesn't remember his past life or what was going on. That he has she calls him a different name. And it's cutting back and forth between that story and this like just absolute terrible, like low down, dirty, rotten crime lord guy, you know. And you're like, how are these two stories connected, kind of thing. And then somebody informs the crime lord, like, we got a tip off that somebody from your past is at this hospital. And somebody sends like his henchmen, and one of them punches the character that Aiko's playing, called Ishmael, punches him in the head, and like, whoosh, it all comes back to him. And he like was part of this gang and was betrayed, and it's this whole double cross thing. And like they kidnap the doctor that was caring for him. And then it just is like, you know, okay, we have another hour of just revenge. Basically, it's just him trying to save her and fight his way through the street gang. And it's fucking awesome. If you've seen The Night Comes for Us or The Raid or things like that, it's super brutal, less gung-fu stuff like in The Raid, but it's just really like gnarly, violent, by any means necessary kind of martial arts that is in a lot of these like Indonesian action films and stuff. So yeah, it rules. It's just like gnarly and fun and exciting. And this guy's awesome. Was he in? No. Who was in the Ip Man movie? Master Z.
Like the Tony main character?
No. They're like, it just had like Man with Hat. Remember that? Like,
Yeah, that was Tony Jaa.
That was Tony Jaa. You're right. Yeah. Anyway, so if you're into these kind of movies, and if you've seen particular The Night Comes for Us, which is another big Netflix movie from these guys, definitely check out Headshot.
All right. Headshot is the name of the movie from the director of The Night Comes for Us. I'm going to add it to my list. Like, I should watch this. Sounds awesome.
It rules. It's really fun. And it's
nice.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where like every fight scene, you're like, no, like it's like every time a finger or an arm or something gets broken, you know, or smashed through a wall or whatever. It's just good stuff.
Nice. All right. And then actually, speaking of action movies, I have a new one to talk about from a maestro himself. And that is John Woo's Silent Nights.
Nice.
Woo,
nice question mark.
Nice question mark. I think this. So John Woo made this new movie. John Woo, of course, legendary action filmmaker, directed The Killer, the original Killer from 89, not the David Fincher Killer. The Killer and Hard Boiled and Better Tomorrow and Face Off and Hard Target and so many huge movies.
Broken Arrow. Don't forget Broken Arrow.
Who could forget Broken Arrow, of course. Has not made an American movie in 20 years. His last American movie was Paycheck with Ben Affleck.
Whoa.
And, you know, he's been kind of on and off making like sometimes historical epics in China and stuff like that since. But this is his first American movie in 20 years. It's called Silent Night. It is a Christmas action movie starring Joel Kinnaman as a man whose son is killed by gang members. Just like he lives in the war-torn, gang-ridden streets of Los Angeles. And one day he's out, he's playing with his son. It's right around Christmas time. He's out with his wife and kid. And this gang shootout, like drive-by thing is happening. And a stray bullet hits his son.
No.
And the red balloon that his son is holding goes up into the air.
Oh my God. Is it then broken by glass punched by Mike Tyson like Ip Man?
It does not happen like that.
No.
So his son is killed. And also, Joel Kinnaman is also hit in this thing, and he gets sent to the hospital and he loses his voice box. He like can't talk anymore.
The titular silent.
And so he is silent. And also most of the movie is silent. Like it's there's very, very little dialogue in Silent Night outside of like, you know, the occasional whispered thing from a character far away or like, you know, a police dispatch in the background or whatever. Right. But nobody's actually like communicating with each other verbally. It's all visual storytelling that Silent Night is doing. So I think it uses that gimmick pretty effectively, and I think the movie itself is fine. It's I've seen people like really hating this movie, and I've seen a few who really love it. And I think if you're a John Woo fan, I think it is worth seeking out, because basically once that happens, then Joel Kinnaman takes like an extra year, like a full year, to like start training to get his revenge against the people who killed his son. And it's really funny because like he, you know, for a while, like a month or two, he like is, you know, in a drunken stupor. He like can't, you know, he lost the will to live. He can't speak. And, you know, he lost his son and everything. And then when he finally like builds up his resolve, he takes a calendar out and he circles December 24th on the calendar and writes in, "Kill them all." And I was like, yeah, here we go. And then he spends the next like 8 months learning self-defense, learning how to fight, learning how to shoot, like doing all that stuff. And then on December 24th, he goes out to kill them all. And kill them all he does. Kid Cudi is also in this movie as a detective who ends up following Joel Kinnaman and like kind of helping him out. And so the first hour or so of the movie, like once the accident happens and then like this whole training thing, there's not a lot of action. It's a lot of like Joel Kinnaman looking sad and then training to get better. And then the final half hour, the movie's only like an hour and a half. The final half hour is just that action. And then that action does deliver. It's pretty solid. There's a really cool stairwell fight scene that's like done in one take or made to look like it is. And yeah, it's a fine time. I think it takes too long to get to some of the crazy action, but there is some cool visual touches from John Woo. It's but it is at the same time a lot more pared down than your typical John Woo action movie, at least from years past. Mm-hmm. Like this feels more like a silent riff on Taken or something like that. So yeah, it's an okay time. I did not dislike it nearly as much as a lot of people did. And I think it's kind of an interesting experiment from John Woo. So there's that.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely interested in seeing it. And, you know, maybe I'll wait for it to be on streamer and with beers and stuff, and it'll be like a fun kind of thing. What if that is a little disappointing, especially I remember that trailer got a lot of hype. Not that I watched most of it, but
the trailer looked pretty cool. And it was attached to Saw 10. So it was a great day at the theater.
Yeah. But to have it sort of be like take an hour for the John Woo stuff to start. Air quotes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I can see why people would be disappointed.
Yeah, you know. Definitely. So Silent Night is in theaters right now. I also went to the theater this weekend to go see a blockbuster that I was very excited about and that a lot of people have been pretty excited about. Godzilla Minus One. And this is the new Japanese Godzilla movie from Toho, who have not released a Godzilla movie since Shin Godzilla in 2016.
Wow.
So it's been like 7 years since the last Japanese Godzilla movie. And it's not a continuation of Shin Godzilla. It is just like a new Godzilla story, like a new take on it. And basically, I was kind of describing the plot of this to you before the podcast, Mike, but just for the listeners at home.
Yes, please.
That's what this podcast is for. Basically, this movie takes place right after World War II, like post-war Japan. It's mostly in like 1947. And your main character is this kamikaze pilot who did not get to fulfill his mission as a kamikaze pilot because Godzilla wiped out his whole troop.
My God.
And so he goes back to his hometown, which has been destroyed by the war. His parents are dead. He meets this woman. Her parents are dead. And this woman's taking care of this baby, not her baby, but that baby's parents are dead. And so the three of them form like a makeshift family together. And this guy is kind of trying to find work, trying to do whatever. And he ends up finding a couple other guys who fought in the war who take on this job of destroying the mines that are out in the sea, mines that were planted by both U.S. and Japanese forces during the war, because it's incredibly dangerous to have a boat out in the sea now because there's bombs everywhere.
Right.
And so their job is to go out to the ocean and deactivate and basically just like shoot all these bombs. And they're doing that like day after day. It's incredibly dangerous work, all that stuff. And then Godzilla shows up. And a lot of this movie is just Jaws, but with Godzilla. And it's pretty rad. And then even the stuff that's not Jaws, but with Godzilla, also pretty rad. I think this movie has some really incredible Godzilla work, some great monster effects, but also really great character work. Like, you know, we talked about on the Yo Pod a couple weeks ago, we talked about Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Right.
And in that episode, I said something like, you know, yeah, there's Anthony Ramos, there's Dominic Fishback. Like, they're the humans in the Transformers movies. There's a ceiling on how much I can care about them, you know? And I feel like that is mostly my attitude with a lot of Godzilla movies. But I really cared about the human characters in this movie. This movie does a really good job of like making it a really interesting premise and kind of having these really good, relatable human characters that makes you feel bad when Godzilla comes to kill them. You know?
Yeah.
But also when Godzilla kills all the humans, pretty awesome.
Pretty
cool.
Pretty dope.
Yeah. And Godzilla himself just looks amazing in this movie. The visual effects are unbelievable. The way they visualize the powers of Godzilla, the atomic breath, just looks like awesome. It's so cool. And we're living in a pretty good time for Godzilla fans because like literally the morning after this movie came out, the trailer for Godzilla X Kong also came out.
Yes, I saw that.
Which also looks pretty fun. I'm looking forward to that. And also there's a Godzilla TV show that's airing right now on Apple TV Plus, which I have not watched yet, but I do want to check it out. Heard pretty good things.
Yeah. Maybe asterisk Godzilla TV show.
It's called Monarch Legacy of Monsters. It's like a Monsterverse show.
Yeah.
That has, it's, you know, Godzilla, Kong, like it takes place in that universe. I believe Godzilla does appear in the show though.
I'm sure. Yeah. And I think I watched the first two episodes, like sort of in the background while some friends were watching it. And they definitely reference, I think, that like G-Day or whatever, like when Godzilla attacked San Francisco. And
right.
But like, it's like, you know, in the mix with all that stuff. But as far as the first two episodes, which is all that was available at the time, Godzilla did not show up yet. But yeah, Skull Island and all that stuff, it's all in that world, which is like neat. That's cool. It's a really like, you know, fruitful world to have stuff take place in. But I was definitely like, this is like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of thing where like we're going to reference all the, you know, these things, but not actually have them in the movie because, you know, it's a TV show. How many millions of dollars could you afford? I mean, granted, it's Apple.
It's Apple. They can spend how much they want, I guess.
Can do whatever they want. So we'll see with that. But yeah, and I didn't like fully pay attention to them. So I don't want to talk too much more on it.
Fair enough. But high recommend on Godzilla Minus One, Mike. I think it would really dig it.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure I'd love it. And I was just thinking about, like, imagine living in a culture where, like, we can just allow a thing to breathe for 7-6 years before we just, like, we packaged it. We slapped it on a lunchbox, you know, like, yeah. Before that. Like, well, imagine if there was even 7 years between Godzilla movies in America. Like, yeah, like, that'd be so cool.
Yeah, well, the American version of that is the Mad Max movies, Mike.
That's true.
We finally have Furiosa coming out next year. Have you watched the trailer for it?
No, I have not.
Looks pretty rad.
Because I know I'm going to see it, so I watched the trailer.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, they waited 9 years in between Mad Max Fury Road and Furiosa, so yeah, that's something, right?
There's that. Yeah, only George Miller would be able to do that.
Pretty much, yeah. That's effectively how that works. But yeah, Godzilla Minus One, it's out in theaters right now, and a huge hit at the, like, I think way bigger than like a Japanese Godzilla movie was expected to do at the box office. So it sounds like, I think it was only supposed to be in theaters for a weekend, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But now, because of how well it's doing, they're keeping it around for longer. So yeah, people should go check it out. Mike D, what else have you been watching?
This is my last movie.
Okay.
And this is a new Shudder original, question mark? I don't know. It just dropped on Shudder recently. I don't know if they like produced it or whatever. And that is It's a Wonderful Knife.
Okay. I've heard pretty good things about this.
Yes. It's pretty fun. As you might expect, It's a Wonderful Life, but a scary one. You know, but scary.
That was the original working title, I think,
yes,
actually.
Basically. It is written by the guy who wrote, what's his name? Who wrote Freaky.
Okay, yeah.
My God.
Is that Christopher Landon, is it? I mean, he directed Freaky.
Yes, this is written by Michael Kennedy.
Okay.
Letterboxd put literally everybody else in the crew before him. Directed by Tyler McIntyre.
It's like the writers struck for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. who looks like directed one of the segments in VHS 99 is okay. The only one that I recognize on here. But this is the star. It also has Joel McHale in it, which is really funny. Justin Long is like the I think doing like a Trump thing, but like not doing a Trump voice, but he's got like a spray tan and veneers, yeah, and like a weird comb over haircut kind of thing. And he's like the town mayor kind of guy.
Okay.
And yeah, it's basically the first act, the first 20 minutes or so, is this kind of just Christmas movie where, you know, every cheery town and stuff, all the kids get together at for like a big party, a Christmas Eve party kind of thing. And a slasher shows up and he kills a couple of the high schoolers. And the main character played by Jane Whittup, who's really good in this, kills the slasher, reveals who it is. Saves the day. And then it cuts to a year later and basically it's destroyed her life. Like, you know, the trauma of her best friends died and nobody's acknowledging that she saved everybody by killing somebody. You know, like it's like a pretty traumatic thing and all this stuff. So she does the wonderful life thing. She goes to like the edge of the river and is like, I wasn't alive. I want to be dead kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's in a town where she never existed, you know?
Okay.
And then it's a wonderful life, but a horror movie, a slasher from there. So that's the first act. That's the setup. And then it's just fun slasher stuff, but mixed in with, you know, wonderful life, Christmassy things. Lots of movie references. One of the characters works in a movie theater and they're like always talking about like, well, this is just like what, you know, they're like calling out the movie and stuff. So that's really fun. And it's a tight like 85 minutes.
Sweet.
It's got a cool premise. The kills are pretty cool. And the design of the slasher, like the costume and mask and stuff, look really awesome. It's like sort of like a Christmas tree topper angel kind of thing. It's sort of like what they're going for. And it looks really spooky and cool.
Yeah.
And fun time. It's on Shudder. Check it out. I don't think it's like necessarily great or anything like that, but it was a fun 85 minutes, just like kill an evening kind of thing. And it's Christmas time, silent night. It's, you know, it's around that time where we're going to start getting Christmas flavored things. I feel like really last year had like a pretty huge boom with the Violent Night.
Yeah, there was Violent Night, and there was another like Killer Santa movie that also came out last year too.
Yeah, it was the Joe Bagos directed movie, and I was like all day trying to remember it, and I just like never bothered to look it up. but yeah, he directed this movie called Christmas Bloody Christmas.
Oh yes, yeah, yeah, I remember that one.
Like the robot Santa goes wrong kind of thing. Right, if you saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Anna the Apocalypse, now on Shudder, by the way.
Oh, really? I think I saw some you tweeting about that, or some people tweeting about that.
Yeah, I've been banging the drum on that movie for a long time. Did you ever see it, Mike?
I did not. I remember when it came out, and you were like, "Oh, it's this," and I was like, "I've got to fucking watch that movie." Yeah. And I just never did.
You should. Yeah, it's really great. If you don't watch it in the next couple of weeks, I guess it's a Mike Makes Mike watch for next December.
yes.
Nice. All right. It's a Wonderful Knife is on Shudder right now, so people should check it out. And then I got two more movies to talk about here, and then one TV show I'll give a shout out to. First of which is a new movie that just premiered on Netflix this past weekend. It is the new film from director Todd Haynes, director of Carol and Dark Waters, one of my favorites of 2019, if you remember, Justice for Dark Waters.
They knew all along.
They knew! And the movie is May, December. And I've been really looking forward to this movie for a while. This, I think, played at the Cannes Film Festival, and it stars Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman. Julianne Moore, I'm trying to think about how best to describe this movie. Do you remember the name Mary Kay Letourneau, Mike?
Yes, but only because that's how everyone's been describing May, okay. December, because yeah. I was too young to really remember that.
Fair enough. I remember that name. I feel like I was...
I know
like
the name, but I don't know what it...
Yeah. It was like a thing in the 90s. But basically, May, December is loosely based on the story of Mary Kay Letourneau. Julianne Moore essentially plays this woman who many years ago got into a relationship with a 13-year-old boy. Like her students,
right.
And it caused a huge scandal. She went to jail, all that stuff. But when she got out of jail, like she and that student got married, they got right. together and had kids together and raised a family and all that stuff. And so now we're like in present day, and Natalie Portman playing an actress who goes over to their house and is like going to star as her in an upcoming movie. And so she's going there to kind of like get a feel for their dynamics and kind of like try to understand her as a person so she can better understand her as the character. It's a really, really fascinating movie. And I think it's got some powerhouse performances in it. Natalie Portman's amazing in it. Julianne Moore, always great. And Charles Melton, who plays Julianne Moore's husband in the movie, the titular, like the one who was 13 years old and mm-hmm. then, you know, became an adult. He was from Riverdale.
Really?
Yeah, he was on Riverdale for like 7 seasons. And I think that's actually like a genius casting move because the idea of his character is that he is basically like mentally stuck. Like he never grew up, essentially. He's mentally stuck as like a teenager because right. Because of all the like the weird traumatic stuff surrounding him and his relationship with Julianne Moore. And so casting this guy from Riverdale, hey, this guy's fantastic. He's so good. But you know, you have this guy who played a high school student for 7 years,
right?
Who is already way older than a high school student. Like he's I think at least 30 or almost 30, right? And so he was on Riverdale for 7 years, and then casting him in this where he's playing a little bit older than he actually is, but he's mentally supposed to be a high school student. So you have that, like, there's a metatextual thing going on there with that casting, which I think is pretty cool. And yeah, I think this movie is so much about like their weird dynamic and you know, kind of the horror of this town that kind of just like, yeah, it's a weird thing that happened, but what are you going to do? You know? Mm-hmm. And then it's also on top of that, a movie about performance and about kind of the imitation and reflection and like, you know, the ethical stuff of, you know, doing a movie based on this and whether it's sensationalizing it or not and trying to find the truth in performance and what Natalie Portman is doing there. And there's just some incredible cinematography that really reflects that. There's a lot of like great mirror imagery in this movie. There's this one shot that they're in a fitting room and Natalie Portman's sitting next to Julianne Moore, but there's a mirror right next to Natalie Portman that's showing Julianne Moore's reflection. And it's sort of like, you know, she's surrounding her at all sides. It's really fantastic. So yeah, I thought this movie was very good. I feel like I didn't love it as much as like I expected to, but it might just be because it was a Netflix movie that I turned on at 11:30 PM on Saturday night. Like it was late.
Yeah.
So who's to say, but I did really enjoy it and it's well worth checking out.
Nice. Yeah. I've been hearing this getting a lot of, you know, end of the year buzz and all this stuff. And
yeah,
I kept looking at it on Netflix and being like, I'm going to watch you eventually. Well, like maybe what if I just watch Headshot instead? Yeah.
You know, like, I'm gonna get around to you. I'm gonna put you on the same pile I put the Irishman on. And
yeah, I don't know if I'm mentally prepared to watch you right now, kind of thing. So I watched the other movie instead.
But right,
looks awesome. or, you know, I've heard really great things about it. So I'm definitely interested.
Yeah, very good. So yeah, May, December, it's on Netflix now. I also want to mention a movie that I had you procure for me a while back, and I finally got around to watching it. I believe it's on Paramount Plus right now. I like Paramount Plus Pasha. With Showtime or whatever, but I used Mike D's extra legal means, and I yes. watched the final film from director William Friedkin, Mike, and that is The Kane Mutiny Court Martial. And so William Friedkin directed this. This was released, I think, a month after he died, or a month or two after he died.
Really soon, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like just, I think it was always meant to be just like, you know, a Showtime movie, like a movie that was going to premiere on Showtime. But, and there is other versions of this movie before, like there's like a 1960s version, like The Kane Mutiny, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. But The Kane Mutiny Court Martial is just a rock solid courtroom drama. And truly, the entire movie is just the court case. Like you, like,
wow.
Like the movie starts when the movie started, I thought something had cut off for a little bit. Like I thought like we had like accidentally pirated it, so it was like 10 minutes into the movie or something. Mm-hmm. But in truth, the movie just kind of just starts. Like it just kind of like goes into it. There's not even like any kind of opening titles or anything. There's just like an establishing shot of a building, tells you where you are, and then you're walking into the room.
Wow.
And so Jason Clarke is in the movie playing a lawyer. Jake Lacy is the defendant. And basically Jake Lacy stands accused of a mutiny. He is a Navy officer who commandeered a ship from his commanding officer, Kiefer Sutherland, on the grounds that he believed his commanding officer was insane. And the movie is Jason Clarke attempting to prove that Kiefer Sutherland was indeed insane. And Lance Reddick is also in the movie as like kind of the head of the council kind of hearing the case. And so it's also one of Lance Reddick's final appearances.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a good showcase of for a few different great actors doing great work. You know, it's pretty unfussy. It's, you know, it's pretty in and out. It's like an hour 45. It sort of feels like a TV movie at points, but I think it does do the job. It's a really effective courtroom drama. You know, it's solid stuff.
Nice. Yeah. This is one of those movies that, you know, William Friedkin's final movie, and it just is like buried somewhere. Nobody really. I mean, I remember when it came out, people were like, "Please, it's on Paramount Plus, go find it and stuff." But I haven't heard about it since then, which is great. I haven't watched it either, so I guess I'm part of the problem. But that's wild. And yeah, they just on Pure Cinema Pod, they just started I think they're doing like a 2-episode thing where they're just pairing like 10 William Friedkin movies. They do like their double feature thing.
Nice.
As a tribute. So they were like just, I was listening to like the very first half hour and they were talking about this and some of his other stuff. So I was like, man, I got to watch some more Friedkin movies. You know, he's another one of those guys like Michael Mann and David Fincher and stuff that
right.
I have seen, you know, the tentpole. movies and a couple of the other ones, but I haven't seen a ton of, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a filmography that I've seen a few from, and, you know, I'm still discovering some. I watched Cruising for the first time this year, and man, what a picture. So
nice.
Good. Yeah, I just recently got the Blu-ray for To Live and Die in L.A., and I'm very excited to watch that. Should be good.
Yeah, save it for season 4 of Complete War.
Yeah, the William Peterson season. It's going to happen, everybody.
Coming up.
And then I want to give a shout out to one last thing, a TV show. I watched the first episode of this new season recently, and that is Fargo, season 5, which, of course, Fargo, based on the movie Fargo from Joel and Ethan Coen, the TV show created by Noah Hawley. And I think you were actually the one that convinced me to watch Fargo back when it was first premiering, I think. I remember, because I caught up with Fargo the first season right before season 2 came out.
Mm.
And I think you had already watched it, and you were like, man, Fargo's so great. You know, it always starts with erstwhile instead of previously, and you know, all
yeah, I love
all
that
kind of stuff. Yeah, and I did really enjoy the first season of Fargo, loved season 2, and I really enjoyed season 3, but I think you were kind of mixed on it.
I don't think I watched season 3. I don't
really?
Or okay. Didn't finish it. I don't remember which one is which. I remember the one in like the 70s. Is that 2 or 3?
That's 2, the one with Kirsten Dunst and
yes.
Jesse Plemons. Yeah, that's the second one. And then season 3, I think it's back to like a present day or a more modern setting.
Yeah.
And that one had Ewan McGregor, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah, that sounds
David
familiar.
Doulis.
Yeah, I probably watched some of that. I don't know if I finished it, but I definitely did not watch 4, which I think is the Chris Rock season, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I watched some of 4, but I never finished it. 4 is pretty boring. It's not very good. I really wanted to like season 4 because I really liked the first 3 seasons. And, you know, I was kind of excited to see, oh, Chris Rock in a different mode. And that one had Timothy Oliphant and Jesse Buckley was in that season.
Right.
And I think I got like 5 episodes into season 4. And I didn't consciously stop watching it, but I kind of just never got around to finishing it.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the thing. So that said, I don't know how the season's going to go. But based on the first episode of Fargo season 5, I'm back in. I don't and I really enjoyed the first episode. That was really, really, really fun. This one has Juno Temple as this woman who maybe has a mysterious past. And, you know, she...
In Fargo?
Fargo. Could you believe it? and so Juno Temple plays this woman who is maybe lying about her past. John Hamm briefly appears in the first episode, but I think we'll have a larger role later on. Jennifer Jason Leigh is in this season of the show as well, playing Juno Temple's mother-in-law, and who is this just like seemingly like super conservative rich person, and just diving into that role really effectively. And also Winston from New Girl is in it, so I had a lot of fun with that.
Nice.
And yeah, the first episode I think really brought it back to like, oh yeah, okay, this is what I liked about the show. It's quirky, it's fun, it's weird. There's a pseudo supernatural element going along with it, which the show has done in the past. And yeah, it evokes the feeling of the movie Fargo while being its own thing. So yeah, first episode of Fargo season 5. I'm into it. See where it goes.
Nice. Seems cool. Yeah, I've heard good like that. That season 5 is like a return to form kind of thing. So, and the cool thing about this show is that it's all anthology stuff, as far as I understand it. So like, you know, I could just go back to 5, start with 5. I don't need to watch 3 and 4.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel totally comfortable just starting now, like having not seen the back half of season 4. I feel totally fine. I remember there are like every once in a while there are references to other seasons, like connections that happen, because it all takes place in the same like shared universe. So I remember at the end of season 2, I think you see like a flash forward of one of the characters from season 1 or something like that. Do you remember that?
Yeah, or like I feel like there's like a weird connection to like a supermarket or something like that, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Sounds familiar. Yeah.
There's like weird stuff like that where it's like, yeah, oh, if you sort of are aware this is a connection to this, you know, like the, like, you know, like the weird Quentin Tarantino verse stuff where it's like, this isn't really a connection, but like it's Red Apple Cigarettes or whatever, you know, it's, or whatever the hell, right? Is that the fake brand?
Yeah, that's the cigarettes.
Yeah. So it's like stuff like that, as far as I remember from the other seasons.
Yeah. It never really goes further than that. So, as far as I can remember, at least, I think the first season does connect to the movie in some way. Like I think they find the bag of money from the movie, right?
Yeah. I think that's how, maybe that's the supermarket thing. Get the money. They find that bag of money and invest it in like a supermarket and become like a magnate or whatever. And that's like how the family has their money. But yeah, they find the money that Steve Buscemi buries with the snow scraper in the movie. Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah, Fargo season 5, it's airing right now. I've only seen the first episode, but I think 3 episodes are out right now. So yeah, worth checking out.
Nice.
And that, I believe, brings us to the end of this week's episode, Mike.
Yes, it is. We did it.
We did it. We certainly did. So, Mike D, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter and Letterboxd and Blue Sky. And if you'd like to donate to support the show, you could do that at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/MikeAndMikePods. And if you want to donate $50, you can buy a topic for an episode.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Mike Makes Mike Watch or no. What's the other one we do? Let's Rank? We dare you. Whatever, $50.
$50. That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. And if you would like some merch, we have merch available on our Redbubble, which is mikeandmikepods.redbubble.com.
Yes, and you can find me online at M Smith Film Blog on Twitter, Mike Smith Film on Letterboxd, and Radio Mike Sandwich on Instagram. Thanks so much for listening to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith. It's my Decrecio. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to contact us, you can tweet at us at Mike and Mike Pod. You can find the rest of our podcast and Rapture Press alongside many other podcasts, all kinds of comic books and movie news and all that good stuff. Next week, speaking of Fargo, actually, we're doing Let's Rank Coen Brothers characters.
Oh, that's right.
With special guest Nick Wormuth. It was his idea. And he's not donating $50. He's just he pitched it to me and he's like, okay, come on, we can do it. Let's rank Coen Brothers characters, not movies. We're ranking the characters.
The characters.
Yes. And I would say, you know, the more obscure the better. You know, the weirder characters, the ones that you really want to champion.
Yeah. That'll be fun. A lot to think about.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's going to be an interesting topic, and it could be a lot of fun. So yeah, Nick Wormuth will be joining us next week for that episode. In the meantime, The Complete Works just got back in the cage to talk Butcher's Crossing, which was just released. Next week, we got another Cage movie for The Complete Works, which is Dream Scenario. Very excited to dig into that one.
He just don't quit, you know?
He just don't quit, except I guess maybe he is now.
So we'll see. We'll talk about it for Butcher's Crossing.
Yes, on Dream Scenario, you mean?
That's what I meant.
Yeah, and that is the end of this week's episode of Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. We will see you on the other side.